It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The Laps Factor Podcast.
What is up, college lacrosse fans? You're watching episode 251 of the Lax Factor Podcast. I am your host, Ted Hoost, and today we're going to talk about some of the games that were played on Saturday. I'm a day late. I went to the Dome on Saturday to watch Syracuse take on Notre Dame. I ended up getting first half started rough. Syracuse got back to within two goals, and at halftime, my kid got sick and looked like he was going to barf his brains out. We weren't sure what his deal was. We end up having to leave because he did look miserable, in fairness to him, in terms of just how he felt. So we left the game at halftime. I watched the second half from the car. Lo and behold, he ended up being all right about halfway home. We determined that the cause of his sickness was more than likely a big fat bag of Skittles at the game, mixed with him probably eating some candy in the car that we didn't know about on the way up, mixed with a big fat lemonade as well. So that was how I got screwed out of the second half of that Syracuse game. Alas, ended up not being all that great anyway, outside of them being able to tie it back up before Notre Dame went on that run. But today, the first game I'm going to talk about Michigan and Maryland. We're going to talk about Penn and Yale, Hopkins, Rutgers, Georgetown, Denver, Syracuse, Notre Dame. And then we'll talk a little bit about Cornell, UMass, and St. Joseph's all picking up wins as well. Before I get into it, as always, be sure to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell so you're notified when we put videos out on YouTube. If you watch or listen somewhere else, all we ask, share the crap out of the podcast. If you have a need for team gear, team apparel, custom lacrosse apparel, reversible shorts, uniforms, all that stuff, go to laxfactor.com. You can get a quote for your custom team gear needs there. And you can also just get swag, t-shirts related to the podcast, t-shirts not related to the podcast, so on and so forth. Now, let me get out of this. I want to talk now about the Michigan and the Maryland game. Michigan came into this one ranked number 2 in the country, and Maryland kind of figured things would probably go as planned after they took a 2-1 lead with 11:06 to play in the first quarter. Kyle Long dodged up the left side from X. He found Braden Irksa on the doorstep. Easy goal. Irksa has been great for Maryland this year. One of the huge reasons that Maryland has not fallen off all that far. Yes, they're 6-3, you know, right now after this loss, and some people don't like this loss, but the fact that Maryland is still in the hunt after losing the wealth of talent they lost last year, guys like Braden Irksa, Kyle Long, they're part of the reason why, but Irksa, a very good surprise here. Then after that, Maryland takes that 2-1 lead. Things started to get weird. Michigan went on a 5-goal run that started with an unassisted goal by Isaac Aronson. Quick dodge up the right side from X. Just put a shoulder down into Trader, let it rip. That tied things up at 2s. The run was capped by Josh Zawada as he got free on the crease. Peter Thompson saw him, hit him, and Zawada did the rest, and the Wolverines at that point had a 6-2 lead. Maryland would manage to bounce back. They'd get within a goal, 7-6, after Kyle Long scored with just under 3 minutes left in the first half, but Michigan would continue to hold the line and pull away by the end, securing the road win over their Big Ten rival. Now, the story in this one wrote itself. Michigan's offensive stars, all of them showed up. Josh Zawada, 3 goals and 4 helpers. Michael Boehm, 4 goals and 2 helpers. Both showed up in a big way on the biggest stage. Now, these guys don't always show up fully, and they don't always show up at the same time, even if one of the other one is having a good game. They both had monster games, and that played into Michigan getting their first win ever against the Terps here. Now, a total team defense, it was a full team defensive effort. I'm trying to figure out the right way to word that. But either way, the Michigan defense played incredible across the board. Not only did their defense do an incredible job stifling the Terps' offense, preventing them from scoring for long stretches at a time, but they were also perfect in clearing the ball. Now let's see what that stat light was like here. Clears. Both teams went perfect clearing the ball. Michigan was 22 of 22. Maryland was 17 of 17. So that one's odd. and clearing, especially in a game like this, when you're trying to upset the number two team in the country, a team that has owned you forever, you go 22 of 22 clearing the ball. That's incredible. Getting a defensive stop, which Michigan did well all day, that's half the battle. Clearing the ball is the other half of the battle, and clearing the ball perfectly, that obviously plays heavily into this. So it wasn't just a good defensive game, but you know, once that defense turns into offense and now has to get the ball into that offensive end of the field, Michigan did an incredible job. It wasn't just Poles, it wasn't the goalkeepers, it was the defensive midfielders, it was offensive mid.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Fielders coming on and helping out as part of that clear. So a hell of a job out of the Michigan defense. That whole unit, though, the defenders, the short stick D mids, the offensive mids that come into play, everybody played out fully. They made Luke Wierman's life very difficult at the faceoff dot. Wierman does not lose very often, but Justin Whitfeld, he went 12 of 15 for Michigan at the dot against one of the best in the game. He combined with Nick Rowlett to hold Wierman to just 13 of 28. And you can see Whitfeld, or I think it's Whitfeld or Wheatfeld, he goes 12 of 15. Nick Rowlett took the other half of the faceoffs and didn't have anywhere near that success. But combined, Wierman was 13 of 28, just 7 ground balls, and very few can say they've dominated Wierman the way that Michigan did here on this day. And then they were tough enough in cage. Michigan has had some consistency issues in net here. Shane Carr has games where he plays well. He's had games where he hasn't played well. So Shane Carr, Hunter Taylor, they split the game. They both make 5 saves. They combine for 10 saves versus just those 11 goals against. Both keepers standing tall. Huge, because that allowed that Wolverines defense to continue to kind of play aggressive, to continue to you know play heavily in passing lanes, keep pestering guys, and they didn't have to let up because their goalkeepers were stopping shots. So that was also huge on the day. If we go into the box score and we just want to see what a couple of other guys did here. If we look at Michigan's, like I said, Zawada and Bame had big days. Jacob Jackson, 3 goals. Peter Thompson and Bryce Clay both go 1-1. An excellent day overall for them. Not a lot of cause turnovers here. Defense just staying home, doing their job, winning their matchups, being pesky, being on guys' hands. So we didn't get like any insane cause turnovers. Although I often wonder, and I haven't checked this, this is the Michigan or Maryland scorebook. I wonder if I looked at Michigan's, if they would show some more cause turnovers here. On the Maryland side, Erksa 3-1, Kyle Long 1-1, Daniel Maltz 2-0, Jack Brennan 1-1, and then they just made it difficult for Maryland all day long. And then we come down here and we see the goalie situation here. Ruppel, just a little bit under 50%. He's been playing really well overall. Teddy Dolan, it looks like, got a minute and 38 seconds, so that's odd. But you see Carr and Hunter Taylor both played well. So big day for Michigan. They beat Maryland. That is awesome for them, and we move on to the next game. Whoops. The next game here, number 20 Yale against number 19 Penn. Another incredible Ivy League matchup between Yale and Penn. And once again, the cardiac Quakers had to show late in order to pick up the W. Penn jumped out to a 4-goal lead early, but Yale kept clawing back and over the second quarter outscored the Quakers 7-3, eventually taking an 11-8 lead with just 6 seconds to play in the first half. Leo Johnson, unassisted, a nice dodge up the left side, turned around, let it rip, scored a goal. Penn wasn't quite done, though. There's only 6 seconds left on the clock in that first half. James Shipley picked up a ground ball off a perfectly clean faceoff win. Who the heck was the fellow who took that perfectly clean faceoff win? It was either Arseri or Constanzo. Probably it was Chris Arseri, though, that took that faceoff. I lost my notes here. Off a perfectly... Okay, yeah, so Shipley. Faceoff win goes directly to Shipley. Shipley picks it up, huffs the ball towards the goal with almost, at that point, I think he might have huffed it towards Cage with like 3 seconds left on the clock. Ben Smith catches it cleanly, buries it as time expired, getting Penn back to within 2 goals. That goal is going to prove insanely pivotal, because anytime you have a 1-goal game and you scored at the end of the half to get back to within 2, And you literally scored as time expired off a play that no one thought. 6 seconds. You don't usually think 6 seconds is going to give you enough time to win a faceoff and then score a goal. That was pretty crazy, actually. So that was important because they needed every point that they got. Now, after a bit of back and forth, Yale would take a 14-16 lead with 7:57 left to play off a Brad Sharp goal, a dodge to the middle of the field. He got his hands free, unleashed, and beat Emmett Carroll in cage. Carroll had a very good game on the day overall. Cue the 80s montage music as Penn would score three unanswered goals to win this game. I will play them out for you. The first, Robert Shane, unassisted, started as a normal alley dodge down the right. He turns back hard to his left hand, lets it rip, 16-15. Yale still ahead. The second goal in the run, Ben Smith, again, unassisted, dodging up the left side. He gets a step, wrapped it around his defender without looking. Now we're tied up at 16s. The game winner, Tynan Walsh. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Sorry, bro. Tynan Walsh from Casey Mulligan. With the success Penn was having dodging up the right from X, Mulligan gave it a go up that right side from X. Saw a slide come that left Walsh alone on the backside of the crease. Mulligan got it to him. Walsh did the rest. Penn is up 17-16, and it's still not over because Yale was going to get a chance to tie the game up. They take a shot, goes out of bounds. We're getting really, really low here on time at this point. Matt Brandau gets a rip off. Emmett Carroll was there to make the save. Piper Bond picked up the rebound, retreated to the far corner of the field, huffed it as far upfield as he possibly could, and then time ran out. Huge win for Penn overall. Now, three of the Quakers' four wins this year have been by a single goal. Penn improves to 4-4 overall, 2-1 in the Ivy, so they're not looking too bad at this point. And Yale drops to 3-4 and 0-3 in the Ivy. I believe Yale started 3-1, and now that makes three straight losses for them after starting 3-1. They're going to drop out of the top 20. Penn, they'll be able to, you know, either keep that 19 spot, maybe even bump up to 17. I forgot where I put them yesterday, but huge win for the Cardiac Quakers. If we look at who did what from a points perspective, Sam Handley, I hadn't mentioned him up to this point, but he goes 2-3 off 9 shots. Not a bad day for him. Important here, only one turnover for Handley. And that's on a day that Penn turned the ball over a lot. I think they turned the ball over 17 times on the day. Let's see here. Yep, 17 times on the day. They failed a bunch of clears. They did not look good, but what I like about this Penn team thus far, they shoot themselves in the foot a lot. They make a lot of, let's say, mistakes due to being aggressive. You'll take those. They make a lot of mistakes due to being stupid, you know, which is odd considering they're an Ivy League team. You don't want to see those, but what I like about them is that no matter how many mistakes they make, they do not give up. They keep playing hard, and they've had a rough go in terms of their non-conference schedule thus far, but they've played some very good teams. So I don't think they're where they want to be at this point, but I don't think they're too displeased with the fact that they're now back to 4-4, and more importantly, 2-1 in the Ivy against some of their rivals. So that's a big deal here. Credit Chris Arcero too, though, 20 of 34 from the faceoff dot with a goal. So that's a huge day out of Chris Arcieri as well. And then, as I said, Emmett Carroll, 12 saves, 16 goals against. It wasn't a great day to be a goalie, but that save by Carroll at the end of the game to seal the deal, absolutely huge, and that's awesome for him. Now, the next game I want to talk about here is Rutgers and Johns Hopkins. And we can see that things went back and forth quite a bit. Hopkins jumped out to a 5-2 lead with 6:27 left. That's a Brett Martin goal from Peshko. And then Rutgers is able to claw back. They tie things up at sevens right here. It was Shane Knobloch unassisted. We fast forward a little bit further, though, and it's this goal here that I want to talk about. Rutgers takes a 10-8 lead with 9:52 left in the third off a Justin Kim goal fed by David Sprock. Now, that's when things finally stop going Rutgers' way over that stretch between the second and the third quarter, and they shift back to Hopkins here. And it ends up being Peshko scores to give Hopkins the lead back. I don't know. I might be butchering this here. I didn't write this one up, as you can tell here, but that Justin Kim goal was huge. And then it's Jacob Angelis. He scores to give Hopkins back that two-goal lead, and then they roll and score the last three of the game. Angelis ends up having a good one. Angelis. I always call him Angelis, and it's technically it's Angelis, I believe, if I'm correct here. So as we look at who did what, though, Angelis, great game. 2 goals, 3 helpers off just 5 shots. Brooks English goes 2-1. And what I like about Hopkins thus far is I've been watching a lot of Hopkins lacrosse, and there's still dudes that show up in the scorebook every once in a while that I'm not fully filled in on, and Brooks English is one of them. Peshko, as we said, 1-1. Martin, McDermott, and Ryan Evans, they each score 2 goals. So Hopkins gets it a little bit from everybody. Important here, too, I wasn't sure. Tim Marcille got yanked in their last game. I wasn't sure what would happen in this one. I figured he'd get the start with maybe just a short leash or whatnot. Looks like that happened, and Marcille pops back. 14 saves versus just 12 goals against, so he has a tough game here. And then the faceoff crew for Hopkins. You see everybody kind of got a little bit of the action here. Tyler Dunn goes 8 of 15. Good job for him. Matt Naruski goes 5 of 12. Logan Callahan, 1 of 4. So they didn't win that battle completely, but they did just good enough against Dugenio and company. I think Dugenio took all but one of them. Yep, he goes 17 to 30, so he wins the better half of it. He honestly goes 1-1 on the day and wins 17 to 30. So he won the faceoff battle, but Hopkins did just enough in this one to make things difficult, win themselves some extra possessions. They end up winning the game. I wanted to see how Hopkins cleared the ball.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This one. Hopkins, yeah, both teams cleared the ball. Both teams only had 2 failed clears, so that's not too bad here. Hopkins picks up the big win, though, and now it looks like Hopkins could be the best team in the Big Ten, but that, like I said, parity in the Big Ten is what we want. Parity in the Big Ten is finally what we have. So at this point, between the regular season, the regular season and the Big Ten doesn't mean a whole lot because every team makes the tournament. So the regular season in the Big Ten is really just a matter of, hey, who's going to get what seed, who's going to get a bye, which is huge. But the fact is, every team in this conference right now is feeling like they have a chance to win this tournament going into it. And that's why this is going to be fun down the stretch in the Big Ten. Let's shut up about that one here. Let's talk about number 16, Denver, losing to number 15, Georgetown. Now, the story of this game was perfectly put to pen, and I actually wrote perfectly put to pen, P-E-N-N with a capital P, by Christian Sweezy of Inside Lacrosse fame. Now, normally I would try to paraphrase this, and I'd write it up myself, but in this case, I'm going to read verbatim from Sweezy's piece because it perfectly illustrates the type of day the Pios had against the Hoyas in this one. So if we come down here, we start reading. It says right here, the Hoyas were definitely in sync throughout their 13-6 victory before 1871 at Cooper Field. Grad student James Riley won 15 of 22 faceoffs and added 9 ground balls, 1 goal, and 1 helper. A hell of a game, and we'll talk a little bit more about Riley here later. Senior Graham Bundy Jr. scored 4 goals. Grad student Will Bowen finished with 5 cost turnovers. What they're getting at, total team effort out of Georgetown. They needed it and they got it. Now, what I really like about this piece here is we get past this where Tierney's just talking about how, hey, they started out 0-3, Georgetown did, and now they're rolling. This is true. This is the part I wanted to read. A sequence after Ray's goal showed their dominance against the Pios. The Hoyas led 12-6, and Riley won the ensuing faceoff. In came midfielders Bundy Ray and freshman Patrick Krogan. Ray took a shot, hit the goalpost. Grad student Brian Minikis grabs the loose ball. Hoyas get another 60 seconds on the shot clock. After numerous passes, grad student Jacob Kelly took a shot that senior Jack Thompson saved with the shaft of his stick. Minikis again picked up the ground ball, and the shot clock once again gets reset to 60 seconds. More passing ensued. Kelly took a shot, hit the crossbar. Hoyas won the race to the sideline to retain possession again, and again another 60 seconds. At this point, Denver called a timeout while the ball was out of bounds to give the defense a rest. When play resumed, the Hoyas used the entire minute before relinquishing possession with 5:54 to play. The one possession lasted 4 minutes and 41 seconds. Now, they didn't score on that possession, but they took 4 minutes and 41 seconds off the clock at a point where Denver was already, their backs were already completely against the wall with the firing squad locked and loaded, and there was nothing they were going to be able to do. So credit to the Georgetown offense for keeping possession when they needed to, but credit that defense overall for not giving Denver very much, very much room to do anything successful. Now, the fact that James Riley brutalized Alex Stathakis at the dot, that was surprising. Stathakis has been as steady as they come in terms of winning draws, and Riley flipped that script and dominated. Now, to add insult to injury, Riley didn't just win 15 of the 22 draws. He also scored a goal and a helper. That is just absolutely body bagging one of the best faceoff men in the country in Alex Stathakis. He's been incredible all year, has a rough game, and his team loses, but by no means is it his bad. Bowen and the Hoya defense, they held the line. Georgetown hasn't gotten very good goalie play thus far out of their roster. Scharfenberger got the start today. He was solid thanks to a defense in front of him that gave up very little overall. He made 8 saves against just 6 goals against. If we come in here and we look at who did what scoring for Denver, not a whole lot. We've got 2 guys with 2 points, Lampert and Mick Kelly. They each go 1-1. For the Hoyas, as we said, Graham Bundy Jr., 4 goals off 9 shots. That's a very efficient game out of Graham Bundy Jr. No turnovers, so they needed him to show up. He does. Brian Minikis goes 2-1. Solomon goes 2-1. Kelly goes 1-2. And then we get like a whole plethora of guys going 1-1. The list of guys that went 1-1, Declan McDermott, Tucker Dordovic, James Riley, their faceoff guy, and Jordan Ray. So a hell of a job by Georgetown. And then we see here troubles in cage. It's persisted all year, last couple of years here for Denver. And Scharfenberger looked good, and they win that game. So that's it. That's all I'm going to talk about that one. Now, the Syracuse game, I have nothing written up for this, so we'll just kind of go through my feelings on this game. That 6-2 first quarter did not feel good, especially with the history between these two teams as of late, where Notre Dame has dominated Syracuse, beating them 4 times over the last 4 meetings, and in every one of those games has beat them by a healthy margin. So, like I said, 6-2 at the end of the first quarter did not feel good, but Cuse getting back to within 9-7 by the half, everything was feeling pretty dope at that point. Enter my son getting sick, me having to leave before the first face-off of the second half. Now I'm watching the game in the car, sipping on a Blue Moon. Maybe I wasn't sipping on a Blue Moon. But yeah, I was. I was definitely sipping on a Blue Moon. I was not driving. My wife was driving. But yeah, so you see that Syracuse got back in it here over the course of that third quarter. Let's see. As we come down, Notre Dame came right out, took an 11-7 lead, but then Syracuse goes on that 5-goal run, capped by Cole Kirst, scoring with, 13:09 left in the fourth quarter. Syracuse at that point took that 12-11 lead. Then, I'm not even going to show it, but the Thompson goal, a lot of Syracuse fans say it was a goal. I initially thought it was a goal, and I forget who posted it on Twitter. I wish I could remember who posted it on Twitter, but I saw a bunch of people stating the rule, and then I saw someone state specifically the rule. If the ball is in the goalkeeper's stick when it crosses the plane and he has possession of it, that is not a goal. So Finn Thompson could have scored a goal to put Syracuse up by 2 at this point. That could have changed the face of the game. I doubt it because Syracuse still got absolutely demolished at the faceoff dot again, which has been this team's problem all year. This team is beat up on defense. They're missing their 2 best poles to injury. Offensively, they're as young as you get, but they have played tough in every area of the field. Thank God for Willmark and Cage. They've played tough everywhere except at the faceoff dot. This team has a severe problem facing off, and they have not. It almost seems like they haven't even tried to fix the problem because you end up seeing a guy like Jack Fine come in. He goes 12 of 30. So that's not terrible here. Richie USA went 0-3. So finally they're trying to make a change, at least giving Fine more draws. But it's just not working out. Syracuse is completely undermanned at the dot. The faceoff guys are getting beat so badly, they can't even force 50-50 ground balls and things of that sort here. You see Fine won 12 draws, but he only picks up 3 ground balls. That's not a ratio you want in terms of, hey, my faceoff guy has 12 wins. He's only picked up 3 ground balls. That means the wings are doing the bulk of the work, and you can live with that if you're still splitting draws, let's say. But the fact that Syracuse can't win a draw to save their life, that's been a problem. It's going to be a problem all year. Credit to Sam Alexo. He has looked incredible. I think he's putting up an All-American level season. I threw him a vote in the midseason All-American list. I don't remember where I put him. If I put him maybe even 3rd team All-American, but I at least got him an honorable mention. So that's going to happen. But Sam Alexo is now starting to look like one of the best long poles in the country. And as long as he's not graduating, I don't think he's graduating, is he? I hope he's not. No, he's a junior. So, yeah, the fact that he's getting to play this much in terms of he's actually playing close D, he's matching up with these teams' best players now when he, you know, after the face-off and everything gets settled and everybody gets to match up. So the fact that he's drawing the types of dudes that he's drawing now and he's having to guard attackmen, that's only going to help him for next year. But the dude's got wheels. The dude can mix it up in transition. And now the dude can play legitimate defense and has actually looked pretty decent overall. If we look at the stats here, let's see what Notre Dame did to us here. Eric Dobson goes 3-2 and puts up 5 points. Jake Taylor, 4 goals off just 5 shots. That dude's a killer. Chris Kavanaugh, 3-1. Pat Kavanaugh, 2-3. So they did hold the brothers Kavanaugh down a little bit more than they used to. But, you know, it's tough. Alex Simmons goes 3-0. He had a couple of nasty shots here. Michael Leo, 1-1. Cole Kearse, 2-2. Owen Hiltz, 2-1. What'd our boy do? Joey Spallina, 1-1. So, yeah, in the end, Cuse couldn't get it done. I didn't expect them to, but they didn't actually play. They actually played much better than I thought they would. If they could just get some new faceoff guys in that could actually win a draw, that would drastically change the face of this team overall. So that's what they're going to have to do next year. We do have a Spallina coming in. He's capable of winning faceoffs. Is he the answer there? I don't know. But they definitely need one. They got to figure some shit out here because it's been rough to watch overall. All right, Cornell, Dartmouth. I didn't really draw this one up at all. I just wanted to see what Cornell did offensively. CJ Kearse once again continues his tear. 5-1 against Dartmouth off 12 shots. You know, one turnover. That's not too bad. Cornell absolutely destroys Dartmouth. We had High Point taking on UMass. This one was important because it was, you know, one, I think the first time these guys have now played as conference foes, and UMass is able to pull out the win. It was tied up with 5:21 left in the game, and Mike Tobin scores the eventual game winner with 4:06 left on the clock, unassisted. And then Anthony Sarasolo. He scores the dagger here, man up goal from on a dish from Tim Hoynes, and they win the game. Important in this one, and why am I covering this game besides the fact it was an important tilt here? We go to the faceoff dot, and we see Caleb Hammett, the drip king, king of all the Riz. He's hoarding all the Riz. He ended up putting up an assist in this one. He wins 15 to 23 draws at the dot, but he scores an assist. Gets on the scorebook. That's pretty awesome. He ends up with 9 ground balls. That's the ratio you like to see. 15 faceoff wins, 9 ground balls. That means he's doing the bulk of the work, and then his wings are coming in to chip in here and there. But UMass picks up a big win. Another one that I wanted to touch on briefly, St. Joseph's. They are tied up here late in the fourth, 4:17 left. Richmond tied it, and then St. Joseph's rattles off over the course of just like a two-minute span, rattles off 3 goals to take a 14-11 lead, and they win this one. Let us see what the St. Joseph's players did here. Levi Anderson was 3 goals. Not bad. Stephen Dwyer and Carter Page each put up 3 in the win as well. And because my kids have a field trip today, because it was a rough weekend overall, I actually got pretty banged up Saturday throughout the day. It was a long day. We went out to dinner after my kid felt better on the way home. We're like, screw it, let's go out to dinner. We went out to dinner. I had a couple more beers, so I was feeling a little bit rough yesterday. It was not just I didn't watch lacrosse on Saturday, and I didn't prepare. There was also a component of it that I kind of felt like crap and just wanted to sit around and play video games, and I did watch some lacrosse as well. But so that's it. I'm going to kill it here. I will be back tomorrow for the Section 4 Lacrosse podcast. A ton of games here that I have to cover because some of these teams have played like 2 or 3 times since the last one. So I'll try to figure out how to kind of piece that together. So bear with me as we do that. And then I will be back on Thursday, the Division 1 or, you know, College Lacrosse preview show. It's not going to be on Wednesdays anymore. It's going to be on Thursdays. So the schedule now, as I've said this, just in case you haven't heard it, Tuesday, Section 4 Lax podcast. That is for my area's high school teams. Thursdays will be the College Lacrosse show, the preview show, and then Sundays will continue to be the recaps and everything like that. Just sorry, I didn't get it till this morning here. So that's it. I'm going to shut the heck up. I'm going to get out of here. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And Hoost is out.
The Lax Factor Podcast.